Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time again, another episode of Sports Card Live. We take a magnifying glass to the sports card industry. News, reviews, thoughts, the occasional tangents, and free stuff. Hosted by Dan Rage, Ryan, and Doug Fresh. Boom!
Pack Rippers and Sports Nuts, welcome to another edition of Sports Card Live. It's been a few weeks, so we got a lot to talk about today. We're joined by Rich Late. We're going to talk about some summit stuff. The industry summit is in a couple weeks, so we're going to, you know, talk about the schedule, some of the events. We're also going to talk a little DealerNet Mall with Rich as well. And then Rich has to go do some breaks. We're going to get into some reviews of Crown Royale, Leaf Metal Football, Supreme Tribute, and wherever that may lead us. So we're joined by Rich Layton from LaytonSportsCards.com. What's up, Rich?
What's going on, guys? How's it going?
Going good, man.
Good.
What's new with you?
Nothing, buddy. Just getting ready to take my trek across the country. Heading out to Vegas, making a couple pit stops on the way. We're actually driving. Everybody thinks we're nuts, but it's kind of something I've always wanted to do. My nephew, Bradley, who works here at the shop with us, he's going to be coming with me on the way out, and Sarah's going to be coming with me on the way back. So just getting everything planned out and ready to go.
Road trip.
Yeah, road trip to the 10th degree, man. It's going to be pretty crazy.
Well, maybe if you get Bradley to drive, you can be the first ever moving car online break. Maybe you can, like, open packs while you're in the car live, while the car is moving. It's never been done before.
Exactly.
Innovation.
And you don't have to – you can just throw the trash out the window as you go. You don't have to worry about it, you know.
Cop stops you. He's like, I got a triple threads pack on my car. Actually, they probably wouldn't even know what that was. They're like, what are you throwing out the window? And if you're in Colorado, they maybe think you're throwing out, like, a marijuana pack or something, you know? You never know.
No, my wife would have me hung. She would have me hang for throwing trash out of any window. So.
Nice. Well, yeah, that should be fun. I've never driven across country, so that's you got to stop and take some pictures, man. Like, you know, everybody else does next to road signs with city limits and stuff and take some pictures. And that should be pretty
awesome. Absolutely, man. I thought maybe I'd give you guys a call. I'd give you guys a call next week and give you an update as to where I was in my adventure.
Nice. And you're going to stop and do some breaks along the way. Is that correct?
We're going to try to if we're able to, depending on our wireless situation. And, you know, we have our hotspot with us and everything else. Sometimes it's spotty. Sometimes, you know, because of AT&T or whatever. You know, you don't have the greatest reception at some places. So we're gonna try. If we can go live, we will. Either way, we will be going live from Vegas when we get there on Friday. So,
sweet.
And then obviously, I mean, I guess we would go into that later, but, you know, we'll both be breaking, you know, Mojo Break and Layton Sports Cards will both be breaking from the summit floor on, I guess, multiple occasions, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be pretty exciting. Yeah, we're doing the we're kind of co-hosting I've let it out in our chat. I don't know if I'm allowed to yet, but we're going to be previewing a new product from Panini. It's a football product. We're going to preview it a week before it comes out, so that should be pretty exciting. We're working on getting a feed in there for you guys at the very least. I know we'll be recording that so that you guys can, you know, watch the video of a new product, and I'm sure – Rich, you guys got something planned for recording as well, so, or at least a stream into the event.
Absolutely. It's going to be fun, man. I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a blast. And actually, I haven't even mentioned Dan's on the line, too. What's going on, Dan?
What is going on? I'm just, you know, chilling, listening to you guys. Rich, going across country like that is, it's crazy, Loke.
Got to do it, my friend. Got to be done.
For lack of a better term. Oh, I mean, what was the flight? Last year you went, you flew. How long was the flight? 6 hours, maybe?
I think it was somewhere in the vicinity of 5.5 hours there and like 4.5 hours back last year.
And that'll get you through maybe what, one state?
That'll get me out to it won't even get me halfway to Indiana from here. So.
Yeah, it'll be rad though. I mean, that sounds like a heck of an adventure. So.
I was thinking almost somewhere along the lines of Fear and Loathing meets some kind of like a baseball card, like Adventures of Baseball Card Collecting while driving to Vegas. It could make for an interesting memoir later on.
Yeah, it's gonna be a while before It's gonna be a while before you actually get to Bat Country, because that's actually your destination. So. But I like
exactly.
the Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, one of my favorite movies. So.
Absolutely.
Good flick.
Yeah, I mean, we were babies about an 11-hour drive from California to Vegas. I mean, it's actually not so bad on the way up because you got, like, you know, slots and poker and drinking and cards to look forward to. But then on the way back, it seems like 11-hour drive is about a 35-hour drive.
You got the hangover to look forward to. You're trying to get it home as fast as possible, and then you realize you're like, "Oh, my trip is over, and I'm still hungover." And I remember
last year when we were actually heading up to our room, and you guys were leaving. And I remember seeing the look on your guys' faces as you were heading to your car. It was about 9 o'clock in the morning after. That was the day after you guys were doing the Great American Case Break and everything else from the summit floor. And then we partied all night, and then you guys had to wake up at 9 o'clock in the morning and drive. The looks on your faces were absolutely priceless. It was hilarious.
Yeah, not a lot of happy faces over here.
I'm like, see you guys next year, man. It was awesome hanging out with you guys. You're like, yeah, all right, see you.
the only thing that made the drive a little bit more manageable was that sandwich to kick it off. I can't even think of the damn name. What was that freaking Thanksgiving sandwich? It was like turkey, cranberry sauce, stuffing in a sandwich. It was like ridiculous. It was
delicious. But the problem was that it was still in Vegas. So I'm like eating the sandwich and I'm like, this is great, but this isn't in San Jose. I'm still 10 hours away from home. I don't like it. I'm like, we should have flew. the previous night, Rich was trying to convince everybody that he's like, hey, I think I'm going to take a train home. What do you guys think?
I was a little inebriated that night, but that's beside the point.
Actually, that sandwich is called The Bobby, and it's, I can't think of the sandwich place, but they definitely don't have one of those places that are, it's Capriotti's. It's actually Doug Cataldo and the guys from the Cardboard Connection video were talking about it one time, and I was like, I got to try this. And it was pretty heavenly. It's, if you guys got a Capriotti's around you, we don't have them out here. It's it was pretty epic. It's like Thanksgiving on a bun. Pretty damn good. I'm hungry. I'm hungry right now. I'm looking at this. I'm even more hungry. So, want a damn Capriotti's sandwich. But Rich, let's kick right into some summit talk. You know, I got the schedule up here. Last year was your first year. What are you kind of taking from last year? What are you expecting from this year's industry summit?
Well, from what I've seen, it looks like there's going to be some changes first off, obviously, what everybody's talking about, who's not going to be there. And then, I think the formats are going to be a little different. I think a lot has changed in the hobby over the last calendar year. So there's going to be some interesting, you know, subjects to talk about and some good discussions. I look forward to those. I look forward to our, I guess you want to call it the second annual group breaker meeting. Man, I couldn't get that one out. I'm interested to see how, if and how much, manufacturers, especially like Tops and, other manufacturers are on board with group breakers, or how, if they've even, you know, they've noticed us or consider us in the marketplace and stuff like that, and see how, you know, if they have any sort of approach to it and what they have to say about it. So, other than that, I'm actually more excited to see friends and, you know, that I haven't seen since last year, and people that I got to meet and maybe meet some new people. So.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it seems like a little bit they're focusing. For those of you guys that don't know, they're like, what are you talking about, Industry Summit? Just to give a little backlog, basically all the main manufacturers, Top Panini, Topps Panini, Upper Deck, some of the smaller TriStar, they all kind of show up. We the main distributors of the products are there. It's a three-day event in Las Vegas. I think this is the fourth year, but they used to do it in Hawaii, so this is the fourth year it's been in Vegas. It's a three-day event. You know, everybody has kind of different presentations from Panini to Topps. They have different kind of parties. They have some open forums. They have card shop meetings. They have group break meetings, stuff like that. Kind of a way to everybody to get together and see how we can improve the industry, I think, is the focus of the event. And also for distributors and manufacturers to, you know, pimp out their new stuff and say thank you for being our customers and buying our stuff. I believe you can get in if you're anybody, as long as you have a blog. Now, I'm not sure. I'm not going to speak out for Kevin Isaacson, but I know there's some people that have created blogs just to go to just kind of, you know, walk around and see what's going on. You get a Panini Black Box, so sometimes that pays for the price of admission. Every Panini Black Box contains a one-of-one, so a lot of people even sell them on eBay for $300, $400, so that kind of pays for your price of admission. And it's just a cool event. I mean, you don't really get too many people in the same room. I know I don't have really anybody in California that is in the sports card industry besides, you know, Dan. So you get everybody in the 300-400 people around the same area, and you can talk shop and woes and, you know, good stories and stuff like that. So
I think this is the fifth year in Vegas, right?
It's either fourth or fifth. I'm not sure. I think the first year we didn't go. So we were the second. So then we were last year, which was the third. So I believe this is the fourth. And that's been since Kevin Isaacson's been doing it. So, and I know they had it in Hawaii before, but Kevin wasn't running it. It was somebody else.
Man, what if they move it back to Hawaii? Can't drive
crazy
to Hawaii. Gonna have to, kayak from the Bay Area. Just get a kayak in there, maybe do some, little kayak on the ocean breaks.
Yeah, Rich would have to definitely take a boat over there if it was in Hawaii somehow, right?
I'm trying to maybe I'd take a hot air balloon or something out there.
There you go.
You gotta stay creative. I can't wherever it is next time. I can't drive. I'm gonna have to come up with a new method.
Yeah. Hopefully they don't like send it to Japan and it's like a, you know, 15-hour flight. That'd be ridiculous. But, well, it looks everything, it kicks off, just to kind of go over the schedule, we're going to talk about DealerNet Mall after we talk about Summit with Rich before he has to go to do some breaks tonight, which you guys can check out at LaytonSportsCards.com. If you guys want to get in a break tonight, he's got some spots available, so check that out. But it looks like the schedule for Sunday, at 10:30, they have a meeting of email marketing social partner Ron Cates from Constant Contact, and that's a pretty valuable event. So I'm going to actually try to – I think we're just going to be getting into that, so we may miss that. And then at noon, they're going to kick off the group breaker meeting, and you know, I'm not sure who's going to be in attendance. I think there's 10 to 15 group breakers that are going to be there, so that should be interesting. I really don't know what we're going to talk about, but we're going to talk for a couple hours, so we should see. It looks like it's noon to 3. So – and coinciding with that, they're going to have a retailer annual meeting. So basically the card shops are going to have a meeting at the same time as the group breaker meeting. So maybe that's kind of keeping us apart so we don't fight or, you know, throw blows. I don't know. Rich, are you going to be at both?
If I figure out a way to clone myself, then yeah. I'm going to try my best to I'll tell you, last year I didn't get to see everything I wanted to see and be at all the meetings I wanted to be at. And this year I want to try to – I'm going to try my best to get to all of the meetings and everything that I didn't get to last year.
Yeah. Sounds like definitely a good plan. So that's kind of our plan as well. Less work, more mingling, and maybe more drink.
I think we only went to one meeting last year.
Yeah, that we were all kind of out and about, if you will, last year.
Yeah.
Every night. So, I'm gonna have my nephew with me. He's 18. He's not 21. So, you know, I'm not gonna really want to leave him behind in the hotel room while we go swashbuckle across Fremont Street. So, you know, I'm gonna try to stay good this year and really try to take in a little bit more of what the summit has to offer this time around. We're not gonna try to. I'm saying that now, but you know how it is when you get out there, the Vegas, you smell, get the smell of Vegas in your nose, and you know before you know it, it's already a week later. So
the bright neon lights of the El Cortez. Yeah, I know. I get it.
The El Cortez. $2 blackjack, man. Come on. The home of Double Down Dan.
$3 blackjack. Play as many hands as you want, but you can only look at one hand at a time. It's very difficult after you've been drinking for about 3 to 4 hours.
Man, that was an epic night.
Yeah, I think they have war there too, don't they? Or you know, guess what number I'm thinking at that one?
Yeah. Guess the number between 1 and 10.
They might as well.
let's talk about the group breaker meeting. I mean, what do you think? I mean, obviously, I think the point of the group breaker meeting is to kind of discuss, you know, how we can all make this better and sustain it for everybody. I mean, I don't really even know what to expect. You know, I'm actually going to be one of the moderators there, and I don't even really know what to talk about at this point. Hopefully, we'll have some questions provided to us, but I really don't know what to expect with it. I mean, what are you kind of going into that meeting, Rich, expecting from the group breaker meeting at the summit?
I have no real expectations for the meeting itself. I'm interested to see who actually goes. In terms of the manufacturers especially, I'd like to see if any of the manufacturers have a representative in there to see what's being discussed or to bring up any kind of interesting points on their behalf. You know, I think there's a lot of things that group breakers would like to talk to manufacturers about, to be honest with you.
Right.
And
right.
If they're not in that meeting, I don't know how much can get done. I mean, it's just, you know, a lot of the people in the room, you know, they conduct business the same way. Not all the people, but some of the people in that room conduct business the same way, and they all have the same questions that we have. So if certain people aren't in that meeting or not curious about what we have to say, then I don't know that it's going to be extremely productive. But it should be interesting regardless. I'd like to see, you know, and I don't know really why they get, I mean, there's two groups of people out there in the breaking world right now, which is razzers and people, you know, and people who don't razz. I don't really know why razzers are considered breakers. I guess they kind of just get lumped in with that. I don't know. I'd like to see if that gets talked about. You know, the more or less the specificity of what we do in the market and how we can affect the marketplace and our share in the market and how it can get bigger, I think is also a main point that needs to be talked about, how to get a bigger share of the marketplace that's already there, or how to make the marketplace bigger.
Right.
Get it, you know, get group breaking noticed more on a national or worldwide scale, as opposed to the way it is now. You know, those sort of things.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I'm going to try to make a formal email to send out or maybe put something on our site to have people that maybe have concerns with manufacturers that may not be able to be answered at the group break meeting, but maybe I'll be able to get Tops or Panini or something, you know, Tops they may be hiding in a corner or something. They may have camouflage on, but I'll find them some way or the other. You know, they're probably not going to be wearing anything that says Tops on there, because they probably don't want to be asked questions, because, you know, based on prior years. But we should kind of make some kind of forum thing that people are going to be able to ask questions that they want us to ask at the summit. But back to the group breaker thing, I agree. That's my thoughts completely. If they don't have a manufacturer there that we can talk about, like, redemptions, expired redemptions is huge. Tops, Panini does a good job at that. They honor that. But Tops,
You know, we pulled a Matt Kemp the other day that was expired. It was the only hit in a box, and it's terrible. The guy gets nothing in our break. I mean, we kind of feel responsible for that. So it's like they need to have some kind of program for that. They need to release a checklist as early as possible, even if it's partial, so that people that are buying into breaks know, hey, I'm buying the Pirates. I want to know at least they got two guys on the checklist, or better yet, I'm buying the Astros, and they haven't been in five Topps products this year at all. Is there going to be an Astro in there? I don't want to have to buy it and then wonder if I'm going to, you know, get any hits or anything. So
right.
You know, that's some of the things
that
we need to ask.
That is definitely, I agree, that's a huge one, is checklists.
You know, I mean, if they're not comfortable releasing a checklist, that means that maybe they're not comfortable with their product. So we need to keep them on that and make sure that they release at least, like I said, even if they're working to the last minute to get somebody to sign, like Tanaka, and they don't know for sure, release a checklist that has TBDs, but you probably know 50 of the guys. You know Garrett Cole's going to be in there or whatever. Put him on the checklist. I mean, right now I'm thinking about putting up a Bowman's team break. All I know is that Chris Bryant's in there. That's it. How can I put up 30 different teams and price them accordingly if I have no idea who's on the checklist? I have
actually,
no clue.
I just got done doing mine, Doug, and I meant to tell you this, that as well. I literally just got done doing mine, and I was going by, believe it or not, I went by an email that was sent to me by two different distributors about the key selling points of the product. And then
yeah.
I was going by literally the sell sheet, like the original sell sheet has about 20 or so different cards and different players with autographs and patches and stuff like that. And it gives you a really good idea of who the highlights of the product are going to be. And then it also says on the sell sheet that there's going to be five lucky redemption cards. So you can pretty much gather who they're going to be too. Just by kind of subtracting who's already pictured in the product.
Right, and they had, like, Abreu, for example, they have pictures of him signing a Bowman card. Now, I don't know
right.
if that's going to be Bowman Chrome or Bowman. So, I mean, it's the same design, and there's no difference of the two. I've seen that he signed those live. So is he going to be at Bowman? Is they going to hold him out for Chrome? It's like, let's kind of let us know this. I don't get it. Let's not play Where's Waldo and try to find stuff on a sell sheet, you know, when you could just easily print it on a checklist that's partial and have 10 guys on there. I mean, especially with Bowman, these are all prospects. They're probably all signed already. They're probably already packed out, ready to go almost. So they already know. So why can't we find a checklist about this? Why do we have to speculate and wonder? It's stupid. So
yeah, you if you dig around, you can usually find partial checklists. But that's not good enough. I agree. They've got to do a better job of that.
Yeah, so we'll try to pound that in their head. I don't know if we're going to get any leeway on that, but and I want to at least talk to about DealerNet Mall before we move on. So me and Dan may talk more about Summit after Rich takes off to his breaks. But a lot of you guys may have already heard, and should I even be promoting this? I don't know. There's a website called DealerNet Mall that's wholesaling to the public now, and you know, from a consumer standpoint, yes, maybe it's good. You get stuff at lower prices, but it's also hurting card stores. It's hurting people that sell product that don't have a lot of it. So there's kind of two sides to the story. There's two point of views on it. And I wanted to, you know, it's only been live for a few weeks. And I wanted to, you know, maybe Rich, you could jump in and see what your opinion is on it.
Oh, man.
as much as you want to let out.
Okay. I'm going to hold back as much as I can here. This is poorly thought out. I'd like to speak with the person whose idea it was and find out who actually is funding said project. It's free. So that's a whole nother story. The fact that it's free, we have to pay to be able to have almost the same access as this website. People who belong to DealerNet or B2B, whatever you want to call it. It is a way on the internet to buy and sell wholesale product from across the country, via the internet, rather than like back in the day, you had to get on the phone, God believe it or not, you had to actually make a phone call to a person and ask them if they had something. With B2B, you don't have to do that. B2B almost sets the secondary marketplace after a product is out. That is basically
right.
The whole idea behind it. You have now added an element to which I don't know how it's legal. I just don't know how it's legal. That the general public, without a retail license or mercantile license, can buy product at wholesale price. Which, I mean, I'm not going to name names, but there are particular websites out there that already provide said product at almost wholesale prices anyway, which drives the price of boxes down, which drives card stores out of business, et cetera, et cetera. I won't even get into that. That's a whole nother story. But I just don't get it. Like, where, I don't know who this benefits other than a couple of very, very select people out there. And obviously, the consumer in the long run will win, but it cuts out the people who are delivering the product already to the consumer. So now you basically just don't even need retail. Just have a wholesale that just sells to everybody, and that's it. I don't know.
Right.
It just cuts out so much from the middle that it leaves nothing to be made on the product.
And maybe I should have backlogged this guy. Some of these people are probably listening, go, what the hell is a DealerNet? So just a backlog. DealerNet B2B was founded so that, you know, you pre-order all your stuff from your distributor. Some go direct and get direct from Tops. But once the product's already out and it's been, like, for example, museum football or even tribute, once it's out, there's really no avenue to buy it unless your distributor has some extra. So basically dealers go on there, and if somebody has an extra case that they can't move, they put it up there at a certain price. So we all had to pay $50, $60, some paid $200 a month to have an account on DealerNet B2B. And you're able to trade product, buy product, sell product if you want within people that have retail wholesale licenses. So that was or if you want to get some 2005 Upper Deck Exquisite, no one has it. You can buy it on here. Somebody in Pennsylvania has it, and they're willing to sell it to you at this price. So it's a way for sports card dealers or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Magic, any kind of collectible card, to be sold on a secondary market. So that's the background of B2B, which, I mean, it started before us, so I know it's at least been around for 3 or 4 years. It's probably going on 10 years. So just recently they launched a DealerNet Mall, which now, instead of being a business-to-business thing, it's a business-to-consumer thing. And basically any card shop, for example, we'll just tribute, for example. I don't remember the price. Let's just say tribute's $260. Every card shop paid $260 for tribute, baseball. Well, maybe some got in over their heads, and now they're selling it for less. So somebody can buy tribute on B2B for $190 right now. So a card shop that's stuck with tribute, they can't even compete with this now. They're going to be stuck with it unless they want to take it at a loss. So, you know, especially if the guy just got it in and he's only trying to make $30 a box, he's selling it for $290. Now somebody can buy it for $190 because they have so much stock and they're willing to take a loss. All it takes is one guy willing to take a loss, and that dictates the market. So it was already kind of bad on DealerNet B2B, and now this mall thing, I don't know what to think of it. I don't know if consumer buying at a wholesale price is going to drive the prices up on these bad products, or it's going to go down even further.
The problem I see, okay, this is the main problem I see, is the fact that these wholesalers aren't going to deliver the same customer service that retail shops are able to provide. And then these customers are going to – they're going to – okay, if the general public is buying at wholesale price, okay, they're getting – their needs are getting filled. The supply and demand chain is broken from the retail aspect. You know what I'm saying? So you cut out the retail aspect. Once these wholesalers stop providing any kind of good customer service, or these people want customer service, they're not going to have anywhere to go. Card shops are going to be out of business. Card shops will not exist. Like, they're not going to be able to exist. They're not going to be able to compete with – you can't sell every product at a loss. You're going to go out of business. It's just – that's general economics. You can't make money by losing money all the time. You're not going to make any money. You're not going to stay in business. You're not going to be able to pay for your bills. So if people want – I can tell you flat out, if people want good customer service – some place to go where they can talk to hobby, talk shop, talk sports, talk – they're going to have to buy products from card shops, from group breakers, et cetera, et cetera. if they decide to take this route, the general public decides to take this route and cut out the retailer and buy stuff at wholesale price, it literally, it takes away the whole customer service aspect of the industry. It's gone. Like,
right.
And then they'll be like, oh, well, this sucks. I'm tired of buying stuff from this unnamed guy in Texas or in Washington or whatever. He just sends me a box in the mail. It's poorly wrapped. It gets here in like in 9 days. I got to pay $10 shipping half the time. This, that, and the other thing. Man, I'm just going to go back to my card shop. Well, guess what? He's not there because you needed to buy it at wholesale price. So
and
that's literally what happens.
And what you don't also realize, too, is that a guy in Texas may have, you know, got the case it out of said product already. So
it's just like buying boxes off of eBay. It's the same thing.
Right.
It's the same thing.
So you don't know if, you know, they say it's best of football or best of baseball or even better yet, museum where there's a guaranteed case hit, triple threat where there's a guaranteed case hit, and maybe they had it in their shop and they, if they have a shop, they may not even have a shop, and the case hit was pulled. So they're like, screw it, I don't want to put it on my customers. I'm just going to sell it to some random person in California and, you know, sell it at this price because I've already pulled the case hit. But I don't want to let my customers know that the case it was already pulled. So there could be a lot of that going around, and you know, you don't really know who to trust on there. So the customer service is completely out of the equation, like Rich said. And you know, it also kind of, you know, if somebody really paid attention to this website, they could think their card shop is screwing them over because they don't really know that the card shop spent $260 for tribute, so they're selling it for $290 now. So they'll go, okay, they're making $30 a box, which is a low margin. And then, but this website's now selling it for $190, so the customer may go, wow, this guy I trusted for, you know, a couple years now is, like, he's making this much on a box? No, he's not. That's where the market went, and he's stuck with the original pre-order. So, I mean, that could people could determine that just by looking on this website. So, I mean, no other industry do you see Apple, you don't see Apple iPhones being sold at wholesale. You know what I mean? You don't see any of that with any other industry.
And any part of retail, it's a simple chain of command. It's the manufacturer, the distributor at wholesale price, the retailer, and the consumer. It's literally in every textbook you will find out there. In every textbook that talks about business and business management, that is the chain of command from manufacturer to wholesaler to retailer to consumer. If you cut out one of those steps, lots of people get hurt. Like, lots and lots of people get hurt. It's a whole industry a whole portion of the industry that you were just cutting out. And it does not work. Wholesalers are not built, they're not designed to deal with the general public. These are people, most of the people that are on B2B, they literally, some of them have a card shop, and it's usually about the size of like a half a garage, and they have a whole, like a, literally a warehouse in the back, filled with cases. And 90% of their time is spent back there doing inventory and filling orders and shipping. That's what they do. They're not there to, you know, they're not designed to send out one box to Joe Schmo and one box to Betty in New Mexico. You know what I mean? They're not built for that. And they will find out really quickly that that's not what it's designed to do.
Right. Now, I mean, to be devil's advocate and here, I mean, maybe the 2013 with the rookie class for football is a soft market. That's why that Ryan mentioned in the chat. 2014 baseball so far with the tribute wasn't as desired for the price point. Maybe that will change this year. Maybe if these guys step up and there's a few good rookies, which we know football. I mean, we've already watched 2014 Leaf Metal Draft, how that's jumped, and people are paying for these Manziels, these Bridgewaters, these Taj Boyds, things like that. So if it does go up, there's not going to be anybody willing to take losses. So this thing may become not wholesale anymore. So that may be the silver lining, that if these guys are no longer going to sell on there, if they're going to, you can only lose money for so long before you are out of business. It's just, if you're going to buy something for $230 and then sell it for $190, how long can you do that? You can't.
I just don't understand in this day and age. And I'm sorry, Dan, you know, this is the last thing I'm going to even say about it. I just don't understand that in this day and age that the general consumer, especially ones that already know how to operate the internet, that the fact that the, what is there, 8 major online retailers of wax and cases and pre-sales and singles, that they, that's not good enough? Like, I don't understand. There's one of them that literally already sells at almost cost and sometimes below cost. I don't understand that we need this. Like, what is – like I said in the beginning, I don't understand the need for it.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out now that it's only, you know, in its baby phase. It's been live for 2 weeks. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. So we'll definitely keep an eye on that. Well, you guys can obviously keep an eye on it too because it's a site that you can look at. Dan, you know, what's your opinion on the DealerNet Mall? How do you see it?
My issue is how is this benefiting DealerNet? You figure that, you know, like some people who subscribe to DealerNet and pay like $30 a month or whatever, why are we going to pay that $30 when we can get the same thing for free through Dealer Mall?
Right.
So I don't know how. I mean, they're going to lose all their subscribers. I mean, it's dumb to give them money when they're offering the same stuff for free. So they're going to lose all their subscribers that were on the business-to-business portion of the site. And I don't know what's – are they going to benefit because they are maybe going to do like an eBay affiliate links on their site to try to gain some money with traffic? Is that what they're going to try to do? Or how is this benefiting them as DealerNet?
You know, without knowing the details, I would only assume they're taking a percentage of the sale on DealerNet Mall. That's the only way I could see that it's going to work for them.
Yeah, exactly. But we just don't know. I mean, what if they're not? Let's say that they're not going to take a percentage. Where is this extra revenue coming from? Why are they putting this into place? How is it going to benefit them? That's my issue. That's like, unless there's somebody behind the scenes that's trying to push them in this direction and financing it for them and saying, hey, we're going to go ahead and, you know, slip you guys a little bit of money if you guys do it this way, that's the only way I can see it. But that's going to be somebody who's going to be unnamed that nobody's ever going to find out.
Right. That's what I was saying in the beginning is that there's we all know, and I'm not going to name names, and you don't really have to. If you know anybody in this industry, you already know that this is benefiting one of a very few select people. That's it. It's one of those few people, or all of them, for all I know. They may have combined efforts. I don't know, you know, but it's one of those handful of people that this is going to benefit.
And it's also the other thing it's going to affect is a lot of distributors that both we deal with and Rich, they use DealerNet as a gauge of where the market's at. And they usually will sell you a product, and they'll be like, okay, it's going for $180 on DealerNet. We'll go ahead and do $180. If that's opened up to the public, the distributors are going to stop using that as a gauge as well. Because, I mean, what's the point? Like, you're not gauging wholesale anymore. You're gauging retail price. So they're not going to be able to use it either. So they're going to probably step away from it and try to figure out another way to gauge the market.
That's the thing, though. That's the other person that's going to hurt is distributors, massive wholesale distributors, not the ones.
They're already cutting back, and they're not going to have any more shelf stock. Why would they order extra shelf stock when they know 98% of the time they're going to take a loss on it?
Yep.
So
yeah,
it's gonna hurt every piece of the chain. It's gonna hurt a little bit. Manufacturers are not gonna have as many pre-orders to distributors. Distributors aren't gonna have shelf stock. Group breakers aren't gonna be able to pull shelf stock from distributors. There's gonna be less cards in the market for consumers and people who want to buy stuff on eBay. There's gonna be less stuff that's gonna be open. So it's gonna be real weird. I mean, we don't really know what's gonna happen until, you know, we can gauge it after 6 months or after a year it's been in place, and we can see how it's affecting the market. But it's difficult because we all know the next year's football class is going to be stacked. So it's going to be hard to gauge what the market – I would like to see what the 2013 products go for at when this date, when this like really starts taking place.
But because even then, if everything goes up across the board in 2014, which it's not going to do, 50% might go up, maybe 60% if we're really lucky. If it goes up, they're still going to be able to see what it's being sold for to retailers. So how do retailers mark up the product to make any sort of money? They can't.
Right.
I could pay $30 less on DealerNet Mall. Like, well, how do you mark up the box? You can't do it.
Yeah.
This industry is like nothing else. Like, this is, there's no other industry like Doug was saying. Like, Apple wouldn't be selling directly. Actually, Apple's a weird comparison because, like, Verizon, when they basically sign you up for an Apple iPhone, they're not making any money on the iPhone. They're making money on you signing up for a contract. So that's, but yeah, I mean, I get like, it's not like at the Apple store has like another subsidiary where you can buy all Apple products at wholesale price.
Right. You don't see Best Buy at $3.99 on an iPad. You don't, and then you go to Walmart and it's $2.50, and then you go to Sam's Club and it's $1.75. They're all the same price.
Yeah,
the difference is maybe Target will give you a $10 gift card if you buy this model or something. That's the only difference that you'll see with it.
Why do you think what 75 to 85% of card shops out there have all turned to gaming? There's a reason for it. Gaming,
yeah.
In the gaming industry, Konami, Wizards of the Coast, and everybody across the board that puts out a gaming product regulates the product. They regulate it. Everything about it, they regulate. Who it's sold to, why they're selling it to them, how much they can buy at a time, and how much it will get sold for at wholesale and retail cost, period.
Right.
Across the board. You can pre-order a box, and I'm going to go out and say it. Most people already know. You can buy a box wholesale cost by the case of Magic Gathering for about $70 to $75. It then retails for $100 to $120 a box. You cannot do that with any sports product. You can't do it. It's impossible.
Right.
There is, if you get half that markup on release day, and then it goes down from there. Or it goes up if you're lucky. But then by that time, if it goes up, usually it's so hot you sell it all at the normal price anyway, and then you don't. And then at this point with the DealerNet Mall thing, if it goes up, you go back for more. Everybody knows what you're paying for it, so there's zero wall. There's no wall in this industry between the consumer and what the wholesalers are selling it to us for. There hasn't been for quite some time.
I mean, it's safe to say that about 5% of the products that come out go up.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get this misconception that, like, it's 50% of the products that go up and this is something that happens all the time. No, this is like one product out of 20 will go up after it gets released. And like Rich said, like, it's super hot and everybody's really blown through it at that point. So when you go back to reorder it, your second wave, your third wave of reordering it, you're ordering it at market value. You're not getting it. You're not going back to the well and getting it for what your original pre-sale price. That never happens.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean,
unlike any other, this industry, the margin fluctuates on a day-to-day basis, and there's no other industry that's like that. I mean, everybody always compares the sports card industry to the stock market, and it is truly almost identical.
And I mean, and I know Rich has to go start his breaks here soon, but I mean, this would not happen if the products were good, though. So I mean, this ultimately falls on these manufacturers to make a better product. So if Tribute was good out of the gate and there was big pulls being pulled right on the first day, even if it went down on the first day, it would go up. They made too much of it, and there was just nothing that's drawing people in to buy it. So, I mean, at the end of the day, the reason why stuff goes down is because the content is not great. So they need to go back to the drawing board, whether it be – I mean – I don't know about you guys, but I've opened three boxes of Turkey Red, and in my opinion, it sucks. But because they only made 4,000 boxes of it, the stuff is doubled in price. So let's use that as a tool to work on maybe major releases like Topps Museum Collection or Tribute. Let's use that model. Even if you have to charge us a little bit more, let's make better content and have less available and make us work. I mean, make it scarce. That's the problem.
We talk about that very often, Doug. And this is closing comments, if you will. Let's remember, this is a collectibles industry. We're not selling T-shirts. We're not selling footballs or baseball gloves. We're selling collectibles. And without supply and demand, without the demand and without the limited supply and the amount of demand, it doesn't work. Therefore, products go down. It's that simple. This is a collectibles industry. That is the number one thing that drives the collectibles industry is supply and demand. If something is hot, that means there's not a lot of it. If there's a lot of it, just like, I don't know, the 90s, like we talk about all the time, the old bubble bursting and everybody freaked out and panicked and dumped all their stuff and lost a ton of money. It's happened before. And if you keep putting out a ton of something and everybody wants it and then everybody's got it, yet you still make it, nobody's going to want it anymore. It's going to go down. It's that easy. Hopefully the manufacturers learn from the mistakes of the past. They're already repeating the same mistakes over and over again right now. And let's hope, like you just said, they see the model. The ones that work, they've got to be able to pay attention to the ones that work and see that when they make a limited collection or a limited product of quantity of something, that it actually goes up almost all the time.
Yep.
I mean, Prism Jumbo went up. They made 4,000 boxes. That was a good model because it dried up and went up. And it wasn't amazing. They had golds and blacks and stuff. That was great. But, before we're going – tell everybody to go check out LaytonSportsCards.com. We're joined by Rich Layton from LaytonSportsCards.com. We were talking a little dealer net mall and summit. So if you just join, go ahead and listen to the archives. It'll be posted on iTunes later. But we'd like to wish Rich a happy break and a good luck to everybody in his break tonight. And if you want to get into a break tonight, check out LaytonSportsCards.com. Anything else to say, Rich, before we let you go?
Not at all, man. I just want to let Dan know we'll have your sippy cup ready for you. And vodka and cranberries all night long, man.
Yeah, buddy. It'll be a blast.
Thanks a lot, guys. I can't wait to see you guys soon in Vegas. And thanks for having me on.
Awesome, man. Thanks again for coming on.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Take care. So, yeah, I mean, just to, I don't want to be all doom and gloom about it. I think there's obviously some promise when it comes to these products. They're still collectors. I love this industry, even though, we complain about it. I love cards. I love opening packs, and that doesn't stop. It's just, we obviously deal with the back end of the industry, ordering, seeing products fall on a daily basis. So, sometimes our show becomes the business side of the hobby, and, we kind of bring you guys into that and see what we're dealing with on a daily basis. And this DealerNet Mall thing, I mean, I do want to – I'm a glass half full guy a lot of the times, and I do want to see – the silver lining in it. I do want to hope that maybe because of their wholesaling to the public, it's going to dry up some of this product, and maybe it'll go up. I mean, I'm actually looking at Tribute now. Last week it was 191. It's up to 204, so maybe that's a silver lining. Some of the wholesalers sold some to the public. Somebody was willingly ready to buy it because they didn't pre-order 4 cases of it. So maybe that is the silver lining with the DealerNet Mall. Is it going to create some stuff to be more collectible? Maybe. So that's my glasses half full type of thing with this thing. But I think at the end of the day, they need to realize the market and realize, like if you listened 2 weeks ago when we had Brian Gray on, and he was saying, I'm not going to pay $50 for a Paul O'Neill auto when Paul O'Neill sells for $25. That hits it on the head. Like, we do not need any more Willene Rosario autos. He sells for $9. He's been in every product from last year. Why does he need to be in 2014 Tribute? He doesn't need to be in there. Yes, he's a good hitter. He hits home runs. He's a good player. But his auto doesn't sell because the market's saturated. So instead of taking that money that you spent on Willie Rosario, they had all the the graph available, they could have went on eBay and seen that all these, even a gold refractor of William Rosario is selling for $20. So we're going to put out a number to 99 from Tribute as a second-year player card, and we're expecting people to be excited about it? No, they're not going to be excited about it. You got to do some research and see what a guy sells for, and if he's asking $20 an auto and he sells for $10, then don't put him in the product. That's simple.
Well, here, see, now I have an argument on the other end of this. So Topps, they're in this industry to make money. So they're going to look at a spreadsheet of players in the league, and they probably assigned a monetary value to each sticker, all right? So they look, and I'm just going to throw out some. So we'll say Eric Hosmer. Eric Hosmer, yeah, he's charging, it's going to be $1.50 an auto for Eric Hosmer. All right, so we'll go ahead and we'll send him 200 stickers, 2,000 stickers, whatever. You look at Willene Rosario. Willene Rosario, that guy's agent has basically told us he's willing to sign for 5 cents an auto. Well, let's go ahead and pick up 40,000 because we can basically save money by putting him in the product. He's
right.
A hit. I mean, he's in the majors. That guy, we're going to basically be able to save money by putting him in there. So, I mean, you don't know the back end of it, but these guys probably put a monetary value, and we know they put a monetary value on their autos. So at the end of the day, in order to put, like, a Don Mattingly or a Wade Boggs, they're going to have to figure out a way to save money, cut the fat, and put in Willene Rosario for 5 cents an auto.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying every box needs to be, oh, God, I got to get a Hank Aaron auto in every Tribute box. I get that, but just maybe some variety. I mean, like Dave Concepcion, he hadn't been in a lot of stuff. I love that they put him in Tribute. That's awesome. He may not be worth a lot, but it's a guy that's not been in there. Matt Williams hasn't been in a ton of stuff. As a Giants fan, that's cool. I'll collect him. But if you're even the most diehard Rocky fan, that maybe there's a Willene Rosario PC collector out there, he was in 2013 Tribute. He was in 2013 Triple Threads. He was in 2013 Chrome. He was in Inception. He was in, you know, he was in Sterling. He was already in 10 of the last 12 releases. So why
but
is
you
he
look between
be-
you look between the lines, and what does it tell you? He's a good value. He's a good value. He obviously is cheaper than everybody else you named. So the guys that we keep on seeing, it's because the value that they are paid for their autograph is a far better deal than anybody else. And with all these demands that, you know, the consumer is putting on these manufacturers for, like, more hits, more hits, more hits, more hits, they go negotiate and try to get the most – they try to get the most bang for their buck. And if that is 40,000 Willene Rosario autos for 5 cents a piece, then that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I
get it. I hear you completely.
That's my theory on it. I mean, I would love to have nothing but Willie Mays and, you know, Mattingly, Tony Gwynn, Ripken, but these guys charge more than Willene Rosario. And if you wanted all those guys in the product wouldn't be $250. It would be $700 a box. Now, at $700 a box, isn't everybody going to be like up in arms going, this is too expensive. I'm out of this hobby. I'm just done with it. I'm going to go find something else to, you know, spend my money on.
I mean, you know, what I do like about what Topps is doing so far is they have revamped their designs, and I'm liking a lot of them. They revamped Triple Threads football. I thought it was amazing, even though it went down. I love the design. Tribute in general, I like the design. It was on-card auto. They did right. There's no chipping and all the issues that people said in the past. There actually isn't a whole lot of redemptions, so they're coming out with products with less redemptions. So as much as everybody is ripping on Topps, I think they are going in the right direction. So, I mean, you know, fast forward last year, I was ripping on their designs. They just rehashed their designs. They are Sterling Baseball. I liked it. It was a new design. I liked it. They're coming out. The design department is doing a good job. I think now what they need to focus on is their acquisition department and say, hey, you know, how much do these guys sign? And you know, we don't know the logistics behind the business, and we probably never will, and we don't know how much guys cost. Maybe some guys won't even sign. You know, some guys don't want to sign for anything. You know, maybe Ken Griffey signs 150, no matter if it's a card or not. They can't have him do more than 25 per product or whatever. We don't know that stuff. But I will give them credit to say that their products have been looking very nice lately, and there's been a step up in that department.
Well, that's the key to adding value to a product without going after the marquee autograph signers. Because some of these guys also have a mentality where they're like, you know, when my career's done, I'm going to have to be able to make money somehow, and I'm going to go to these card shows, and I'm going to charge $75 an auto. Now, if I basically – now, Willian Rosario, getting back to Willian Rosario, he signed 100,000 stickers as autos everywhere. When he retires, do you think he's going to be able to go to a card show in Colorado and be able to charge $75 an auto? No. Absolutely not, because he has devalued his auto so much. So some of these guys probably have a mindset where they're like the Brandon Crawfords of the world. He's like, you know, I'm probably not going to be a Hall of Fame player, and when my career is over and I want to go do these autograph signings for TriStar when they come to my area, I want to be able to charge $75 an auto. If I have a million autos on the market, I'm not going to be able to do that. Look at Pete Rose. Pete Rose's autos are worth nothing.
Right.
Because the market is completely flooded with them. They're everywhere.
You can buy a $20 blaster box with a guaranteed Pete Rose auto.
Yes. So that's also mentality with the players. It's probably their thought process is like, I don't want to devalue my auto. I want to have a way to make money after my career in baseball. Getting back to adding value without putting extra autos or, you know, marquee subjects is what you're right on with the design. Design is something that's going to cost Topps a little bit of money, but not as much as acquiring these autographs from these guys.
Yes.
And it's something that they can kind of reuse a little bit and kind of rehash and put new spins on it. And they could also do it with memorabilia. I think memorabilia, these manufacturers have gotten super lazy. They're like, you know what? Single color relic, whatever, it's a hit. Like, you guys want hits? Hit, all hits all day. Now, they got to change it up a little bit with the design. Maybe put some more game-used memorabilia in there. Spend a little bit more money to obtain some cool memorabilia pieces, and it will add value to your product.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. And I want to keep this conversation going. I'm actually need to run out the door. It's going to be an excuse to use the restroom because I drink a lot of water. So I'm going to play an oldie, a little flashbacks for you guys. A lot of you guys have already heard this. Maybe you guys haven't. I think it's from the Mojo Break podcast day. So we got a little throwback here. So we'll be right back.
Flashbacks of mediocrity. The year is 2007. This is the average Joe walking into a card store. I'm at the bar with you. Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, how you doing, man? Hey, nice velour suit. Did Mark Echo have a discount?
Yeah, man. Got that. Picked this up for like one.
One what?
$100. Yeah. My boy works down there at the place in the mall, man.
Fat Farm? Juicy?
Yeah, something like that. No, what's that place called in the mall, man? Anyways, hey, I'm trying to get me a Jamarcus card. I want to pick that up. What kind of set should I buy, man?
Well, you're looking for top shelf. You're looking for just something basic.
I ain't talking about alcohol. I'm talking about a Jamarcus Russell card,
man.
All right. An autograph.
All right, let me get you the cream of the crop right now. We got this Topps Triple Threads. You hip to that? Too many boxes. One full box, I can do it for $175.
Triple Threads, hey, we're not talking about my velour suit, man. I want to pick up some cards and have some Jamarcus Russell on them.
Hey, this Topps Triple Thread might have a relic of your velour suit.
Sweet, man. Hey, how much is that going to set me back, man?
I told you, $175 is the best I can do.
Man, I'll give you $40.
Dollars?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually not going to work out. The best I can do in cash, I'll do 155, and I'll throw in some top loaders for your hit.
All right, man. How about I give you 150, and you give me 130-point top loaders?
I don't think you're going to need 130-point top loaders.
You don't know what I do with my base cars, man, is I take a lot of them, I just shove them all up in there.
Where are you from?
Oakland, smoking.
All right.
Anyways, you know, I've been listening to that T-Pain, thought I'd come in the store. Looks like you got a good establishment, man. Can you sell that for 150 for me?
Okay, 150. Let's do it.
All right, let me bust into this. I better get myself a DeMarcus Russell.
Can I get some cash up front?
No, I got to see what I get first, man. You don't get the merchandise without a... I don't pay before I see what I'm getting.
You good for
it? Oh, man. What is this, a relic? What's a relic, man? Isn't that something old? It's an antique store.
It's a Jersey Pete. Man, that's a Calvin Johnson relic. That's number 10.
Like Calvin and Hobbs, man? I've never even heard of this guy. I just want me a DeMarcus Russell.
He's the number one receiver in this year's draft. How much you want for that?
You can just get $150.
Dollars?
Yeah.
I'll give you a top loader.
Hey, next pack. Oh, snap.
What'd you get?
Oh, DeMarcus Russell 101. Triple auto.
Congratulations.
Damn.
He signed it 3 times?
No, triple jersey auto is what I'm trying to say, man. Clean out your ears, man.
Weird.
I know you're blinded by my velour suit, but I got a triple auto with DeMarcus Russell here, man.
Wow.
That's my favorite player from TSU.
Actually, one of TSU?
TSU, man.
He went to Tulane?
He went to TSU, man. What are you trying to question me for?
Okay,
I'm about to
pistol
whip this motherfucker.
Let me get you a top loader. Hey, are you... You married to that card?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think this, I'm not into the stocks game, but I think this is a great investment.
Okay. How about, look, I got this 101 Adrian Peterson here, auto. I know a guy who paid me a good amount of money for that card. How about we do a straight across trade?
Adrian Peterson, the guy that plays for Chicago?
No, he plays for Viking. Are you a football guy?
I watch every Sunday, man.
Every Sunday?
Every Sunday. I don't want the guy on Chicago that's got the dreads, man.
That's the wrong guy.
Oh.
So,
you mean the guy that plays for the Vikings, dude? That guy's, he's the next Lawrence Phillips.
Wow. I'll give you $100 and my Adrian Peterson 101.
No, man.
You want to do that?
No, because come 2011, when Jamaicus has won 3 Super Bowls, I'm going to be able to sell that for like $1,500. You want to give me $1,500 right now? I'll sell it.
Ooh, I'm going to have to pass on that.
Well, I'm going to walk out your store. I'm going to come back in 2011 and slim. DeMarcus Russell is going to win 3 Super Bowls.
I'll give you.
And I'll be laughing at you.
I'll give you $50 and you come back.
I don't think so.
Hey, but I appreciate your business anyway.
All right, well, have a good day. I ain't paying you. This has been an episode of Flashbacks of Mediocrity.
All right, that was that. We did that in like 2011, didn't we?
That was an oldie. That was a long time ago.
All right, wait, we're back?
We're back. No, I said it. I think we did that in 2011, because I said 2011 in there. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you were singing some funky song at the beginning that I'm not real hip to, but I guess it was a hit back in 2010.
Yeah, I think it was a hit in 2007. I used the time, man. I was up on the time frame when we did that song. So.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. I dated it back. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you really, really thought about that one.
I did, yeah. It's a lot of production value in that one, you know. We did it at the studio back in the day. It was one take. So we have a few better ones. We always play the Ryan Leaf one with the customer service call. So I don't want to play that one again. So I think I would play something different. But
I mean, I think we're gonna have to own the royalties to Faith No More if we keep on playing that one. We're gonna be like, hey, stop using our song.
Yeah, maybe we'll play that at the maybe later in the show just to
kill content. Maybe you should do a new one for USPS. And you can also use that song because they actually have it in one of their stickers. Because we care.
Oh yeah, that's funny you bring that up. We should probably talk about that. We sent a 13-ounce package to somebody. It was a box of Prism and a hit from a break. So it was a hefty bubble mailer, and you know, of course we ship 300 packages a day, and or not a day, maybe a week, maybe 300 to 500 packages a week. So we know, I would say we're probably professional card shippers at this point. So we tape it, especially the bigger packages, you know, and stuff like that. So there was a kind of a package that was just in limbo, and it gets sent back, and it's in a bag, and obviously there's no cards in it anymore. And UPS, basically, USPS, United States Postal Service, basically has a little note attached saying, sorry, we lost your card. They somehow came out of the package, but we care about your business, so we wanted to say that we're sorry. But as far as the value is concerned, since you didn't have any insurance on there, you're effed. So that's basically it. But they said that they care about us at least. So, you know, I guess at the end of the day, I went home and I was like, man, the Postal Service cares about me. At least somebody does. You know, it was a good feeling. But
I love how they went out and made a stock sticker that says we care. Thinking about ordering some for us. Maybe we could have Shane put on every Bubble Mailer. We're like, we care. Maybe we can make our own, though. We care a lot.
Yeah. And maybe we can, like, put a little thing, you press a button, and it plays 10 snippets from Faith No More's We Care a Lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Trevor, they should have gave us a damn free hug. I feel a little bit better about that. Wow, John Day got Buster Posey auto, $95 auto, got lost. Yeah, made somebody's post office, somebody's kid happy at the post office.
Well, the thing that sucks, like, looking at the package they sent back, like, it was cut a little bit on the side, so you can probably see, it probably got ripped a little bit, and you could see what the contents were, and then we actually took it out of the bag, and you can see where it was cut on top perfectly.
Like, perfectly. Yeah, there was a slice all, right, yeah, there was a
so
slice
it was
all
like, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but it really looks like somebody saw what was in the Bubble Mailer, and they're like, oh, okay, and then took it out, perfectly sliced the top, took the contents out, threw the Bubble Mailer back in the sorting tray, and that's that. And then they basically get it and go, oh, it's an empty package. Let's put a We Care sticker on it and send it back to them with a smiley face attached to it.
Yeah, John says he got a Bubble Mailer in a body bag. That pretty much sums it up, because that's what happens. Like, your Bubble Mailer died. It's dead now. You got nothing. But, you know, from our standpoint, if it's a bigger card, we insure it, stuff like that. But I think this was just it was some base cards, and it was a dual relic of Ricky Henderson and Tony Gwynn from Pastime. So it didn't really the amount of the cards didn't weigh us, you know, didn't warrant us insuring it, but. That brings up another question that we really never have talked about on this show. So, you know, we pulled these, for example, we pulled out of Best of Football. We pulled a Aaron Rodgers 9-5 exquisite rookie auto. That was the most recent memory big pull that we pulled in a while. It sells on eBay. And it's the highest on the population report because it had 2 10s. So it was an Aaron Rodgers exquisite dual patch auto, rookie auto. Some were speculating that it was maybe a $3,000 card, but at the very least, it's a $2,000 card. So, okay, so we insure that for $2,000, right? Which we did. We have signature confirmation. This thing happens. Aren't they going to want you to show them a receipt? So you're filing a claim and you have insurance, and you say they want you to provide them with a receipt, and all the receipt you're going to have is a Leaf Best of Football box. So you're going to say, okay, I got a receipt for $250. That's all it's going to cover, right? Am I wrong on this? Or
that,
can you
that
actually?
Is, you're right. That is all it's going to cover.
At the end of the day,
they don't base it on the secondary market. Now, you know, I mean, say, what if the box that you paid was $250 and the card was worth $80 and it
right.
wasn't fair? And I guess, kind of came, I guess you kind of came up. But
what if, I mean, let's say somebody on eBay pays $2,500 for a card, and then there's documents of that that they would cover that.
I don't know. I don't know if they're gonna. I don't know if they're gonna base it on the secondary market. They're gonna base it on whatever your receipt is with your name on it that you basically purchased it from us, and they'll probably reimburse you for the box price. But again. Do you think they're going to send you a check, like, right away? you're probably going to have to jump through a million flaming hoops to get your money back. And
right.
you're not even getting the value of the card. You're going to be getting the value of what the box price was.
Right.
And, I mean, I just got to assume the way the post office runs that it's not a real cut-and-dry process.
Yes.
It's probably a process to where you're dealing with it, so many man-hours dealing with it where you're like, oh, my God, is it even worth it? Is it even worth
right.
it to, like, spend 20 hours talking to 10 different people just getting the runaround? Because you know everybody you talk to is going to be like, oh, you got to contact this person. Oh, you got to contact this person. They make it so it's very difficult to resolve a problem. So if you're ever going to run a business, don't take a page out of the USPS customer service.
Right.
Situation.
Yes. 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 I do. I mean, luckily we pretty much print everything here and we just drop them off. I mean, we could even schedule pickups if we wanted to, but we don't do that. We both fortunate up here in San Jose that there's a good amount of post offices where you can literally load up we load up one of those things and we drop all of our bubble mailers off. So that's how we do it. But, you know, I've had to go in there a few times where I was had stuff delivered to my house and, you know, they left me a note and, you know, it's here, come get it. I just remember I've already told Dan this story, but I had something that I needed to pick up and they had it. I went there at 8 in the morning. I usually get in here about 8:30 in the morning. And I was there in line at 8, and they had a separate line just for people picking up stuff as opposed to the people that were, like, buying stuff. And there was, like, 7 of us in line. You know, we all had just our little slips and stuff like that. And the lady was literally taking one at a time and going to the back and getting one – and taking forever because it's not sorted back there. And taking 10 minutes per customer, 10, 15 minutes per customer. I could see her walking around back and forth back there. So when she came back up, I thought, hey, we're all just picking up something. Why can't we all give you our slips? Or maybe 3 if 4 is too much. You can get all of them while you're back there. Bring it up. You don't have to keep walking in the back. And she just looked at me like I was stupid. Like I had, like, it's a crazy thought. And I'm like, you know, and then when I actually got up to the front after 35 minutes, because there were 6 of us in line, everybody took about 10 minutes. I asked her it again, and she goes, well, I'm new. You need to talk to my boss. I said, well, can't you think, you know, I don't want to be rude. So I was like, all right, whatever. But it's like, can't you think for yourself? Wouldn't you think that would save you some time, you know, and get more people in and out of there? But it's just, you know, something that I guess seems common sense.
Let me give you the correct answer. I don't work on piecework. I get paid by the hour.
Yes, exactly.
If I get an opportunity to go back there and wander around and kill 15 minutes of my day, sign me up all day long. That's basically what they're trained to do.
It's true. That's
I can guarantee
point.
You if they were like, you know what? For every slip that you give somebody, you get an extra 50-cent bonus. I can guarantee you should be like grabbing all of them. Should be like, I'll take everybody's slip. I'll do it all in one shot. Let's get everybody. Like, you know what, actually, if you guys just want to come back here and, like, you know, find your own package, well, come on, let's get on the line.
Call ahead of time, you know. Leave me a voicemail in the morning. I'll have it ready for you, right? Give some incentive.
I mean, that's the issue with the Postal Service is that they give their employees no incentive. You have no incentive to give good customer service. You have no incentive to... you know, bust your ass and, you know, give the extra effort. They probably train you to work less.
Well, that's why they call it going postal, bro. I guess they recreated that for a reason, right? Because you work at the post office, you're so goddamn upset all the time, you just go and postal on people, punch people in the face. You're dealing with packages all day and people that don't know how to fill out their envelopes properly. I mean, go postal. So, yeah, that's how that started. But I wanted to get into some reviews quickly, you know, products that came out since we've been live, which was 2 weeks ago. Crown Royale, 2014 Leaf Metal Football, Top Supreme, Topps Tribute, and Donruss Baseball, no one cares, came out. So we want to talk about those. I think we'll go ahead and start with Crown Royale. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on these. I'll give you my likes, my dislikes, and then we'll go over to Dan. I like the silhouettes this year. They look nice. On-card autos, multicolored patches, good job. What I didn't like was the other three packs in the box. The one pack that had the silhouette, I liked it. The other three packs, I didn't like it. They had dumpy autos, single-color relics. But overall, I think the silhouette's going to be a collectible rookie card, and they have some veterans on there, so I think Crown Royale has its place. What are your thoughts?
Same thing. It was what I expected it to be. The silhouettes, they did a good job. They got something good there, and I hope they don't get to the point where they water down and start putting silhouettes in everything, because it kind of seems like they are. They're like, we got a good design, everybody likes it, it works well in the secondary market, it adds value to our product, now let's go ahead and put silhouettes into everything, because if you put it into everything, it's going to be the norm.
Is it just me, not to change the subject, but look back to like 2010 and 2011 products. Is it just me, or did they have a lot more vets and legends in those years of products compared to this year?
Yeah, and you know what? You know, really, it's really sad about that is the fact that they really needed more vets and the Hall of Famers this year than they ever would need in any other year, and.
Yeah.
I remember last year at the summit, Panini, in their big speech to everybody, was like, don't worry about the rookie class in 2013. We're going to make it happen. I don't want to hear anything else about there being a poor rookie class. We're going to add value to this year. We're going to make it so these cards are collectible. And we left there optimistic. They sold
yeah.
us. They had us hook, line, and sinker. We were like, we were advocates of Panini. We're like, they're going to make it happen. They're going to do it. This is going to be amazing. They know what to expect. They understand what they're going to have to do to add value to the customers. Like, they didn't do it. If anything,
yeah.
they did less. They're like, okay, we got to really – I mean, it was all smoke and mirrors. It was like, let's go ahead and tell these people one thing. They'll buy our products, and we'll try to figure it out on the fly. And
you look at 2011 playbook, and remember how many, like, Ronnie Lotts and frickin' Randall Cunninghams and, you know, Doug Flutie and Bob Gracie autos were coming out of that stuff. It was, like, amazing. I mean, it went down. I don't know why. And then you look at 2012, and they obviously relied on the rookie class. I'm just talking about the playbook brand. You look at 2012, and there was less vets. There was hardly any, but the rookies were good enough to drive it. So I think they took that strategy to 2013. They said, screw the vets. They're just going to make rookies. And I don't know why. I really don't. I mean, maybe they used all their stickers in 2010, 2011. They just cost too much to get these guys now. But I really don't understand the 100% rookie-focused products. I know we love to collect rookies, and those generally hold their value. But, you know, Crown Royale could have done so much better if they would have included some of these veterans and stuff like that. So overall, I think it's a fun rip for the price point to get back to Crown Royale. And I just go off on tons of tangents here. Crown Royale, I think it's a fun rip. I think there's some value. It's definitely not the worst product of the year, but I wouldn't say it's the best product of the year. I think it's kind of in that median range.
It is what we thought it would be.
I know we need a Dennis Green little thing there. So,
the only thing that sucks this year is the fact that you would open up a case and you knew that the rookie class wasn't great, and I still think that this rookie class is underrated. You're going to see
yeah.
guys who are going to emerge in this rookie class, and you're like, okay, that rookie class really wasn't as bad as we thought. I still think that. I think Robert Woods, Keenan Allen, Marcus Wheaton, there's a lot of guys who are going to be good football players. Maybe not superstars, but good football players.
Yes.
But it just sucked knowing that, like, they needed to put more veterans in there. And they could have – knowing that, like, when you open up a case and you got, like, a Matt Forte auto, and you're like, that was my case hit. There should have been, like, five Matt Forte-type players in that case, not one.
Yes.
And knowing, like, you open up a case and you get, like, a Steve Johnson. And you're like, there's my vet hit. There's my vet hit. I get one. I get one vet auto. They should have done better than that. It should have been a Mike Wallace and a Steve Johnson. And, like, a – I mean, there's so much more they can do with it. Like a Jamal Charles. There's guys in the league that have collectability that they could have used this year, and they chose not to do it.
They're all competing at the rookie premiere to sign these guys, and I think it's become every year it's become, you know, let's get more and more and more from these guys. We need more autos. We need to ink deals with Nile Davis for 10,000 stickers. We need, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago it was like, okay, let's get, you know, let's have Mario Williams sign 500 stickers. And then they're like, oh, well, we need more product redemption, stuff like that. So I think they spend so much money out of the gate that they are tied to these rookies. So maybe it all starts at the beginning of the year. And they really don't know how these guys are going to perform, but they have to ink deals with these guys, and they have to plan out 30 products with these guys in it, and they have to spend so much money that they have to use it to get their return on investment. So I don't know, you know. I mean, I'm, you know, the rookie class that I'm looking at that's probably the worst in recent years. We can't say that this one's the worst yet because we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen next year. Cordarrelle Patterson could have 1,300 yards, and everybody's buying 13 football again. Or Eddie Lacy could go off and, you know, get close to 2,000 yards. Or Mike Glennon could win 13 games. Or, you know, stuff like E.J. Manuel could get the Bills to the playoffs and then he's collectible again. But things can happen to change 13. Right now, obviously, these guys didn't make enough of an impact to do so. But looking back at 2006 was probably the worst in recent memory. I mean, I'm looking at the draft. I mean, Mario Williams, Reggie Bush is decent now, I guess. Vince Young. A.J. Hawk is decent. Vernon Davis, decent. Matt Leinart. You know, that was a really bad rookie class. But at the time, it was selling well because Vince Young, Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart were huge names. So people were shelling ducats for these guys. I mean, dropping some coin on these guys. So, I mean, you could see that. Is that worse than this? Investing in these guys, going all in and becoming a Matt Leinart, PC guy? You spent $10,000 on Matt Leinart. At least this year, you know, these guys have some upside. You know what I'm saying?
You know, the funny thing is because there's so many USC fans out there. I bet Matt Leinart autos don't sell for as little as you think. I bet Matt Leinart actually sells pretty well considering that he doesn't play football.
All right, I'm going to type in Matt Leinart auto right now. I'm going to type in Matt Leinart rookie auto, okay? And I'm going to hit highest sold auction. I haven't done it yet. Put a number out there. We'll see how close you are.
I'm going to say, wait, highest?
Highest. I'm going to put highest.
You want me to get the highest? I'm going to say
$220. Okay, let's see. Matt Leinart rookie. $220, okay. Let's see, highest? And we're going to do completed listings. It's got to be sold. Completed and sold. And this usually only goes back about 2 months. $53. You weren't even close.
Yeah. $53 ain't bad, though.
$53. It was no, a, I mean, 2006 exquisite auto. Graded 9s. It's probably not. I mean, to give you a little bit of credit, there probably, you know, wasn't a whole lot on there.
Man, I got to lay off the peyote.
So, there's probably not a lot of people selling right now.
Yeah, because they're holding on. They're holding on to them because you never know. But, no, I mean, it's probably like number to what, 199?
It is number to
99. 99 and
three-color
graded
on card.
It's graded a 9. So, I mean, say if there was one out there that was numbered a 5, I could beat you worth $200.
Well, let's see. I'm going to click off sold listings and see if there was somebody asking there's it's a sale. It's a steal. It is a steal. Buy alert here. Buy alert. This is a steal at $540. You got a triple auto of Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, and Lendale White. Triple auto. Number to 10 for 5-4. It's on sale from 600 to 540. I'd buy it now. I'm going to try to. You guys may beat me to it, but I'm going after it. Crickets.
Got you.
Len Whale? Remember Len Whale from the Titans? Len Whale White? Man.
Didn't he say that in the offseason he was like, well, how'd you come into camp, like, you know, in shape? And he's like, he either, like, said he stopped drinking tequila. He's like, I stopped drinking a bottle of tequila every night, and now I'm in shape.
Yeah, he was a big boy. All right, well, you're closer, Dan. Somebody, Donovan, found a one-of-one logo shield from Ultimate Collection of Matt Leinart and sold for $161.
There we go. I'm telling you, not that bad.
Man, you know, $161, I don't know. I should have tried to bid on that. It would be like, you know.
Shoot, tame up.
You know,
You could have bid on that. You could have bid on that for $161. And then went to the office and sold it to me for $220.
Yeah, that's $60 right there. You know, one thing I got to say about Matt Leinart's auto is it's terrible. That's another thing I wanted to talk about.
Like his arm and his career.
Yes,
it's terrible.
Yeah, maybe the auto. That's a good question. Let's search that. Like, what guy has, like, the worst auto that's, like, a superstar? I mean, because just in recent memory, Mike Trout has a nice auto. Bryce Harper has a decent auto. RG3 has a decent auto. Andrew Luck has a decent auto. Does the auto dictate how good the player is? That'd be an interesting study. Because Matt Leinart's auto sucks. Baran Morrissey has, like, the worst one. And he doesn't play football anymore.
Yeah, but, I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson has a pretty bad auto.
But it's CPAT, you know? I mean, it's not terrible. It's lower. It's the lower 20 percentile, I'll give you that. But it's not Brand Morency status. So based on his auto, we busted some Leaf Metal draft. We did not pull a Teddy Bridgewater. But that guy, his auto sucks. He basically does a T, a line, and a B. So is he going to be terrible because of that? Maybe. Maybe his auto dictates. Maybe instead of running a combine, they should just look at these guys' auto beforehand and go, this guy's going to suck. His auto sucks.
That should be one of the steps in the combine. They're like, all right, jump as far as you can, jump as high as you can, run as fast as you can, swirl around in a circle. Now come over here and write your, like, sign your name.
Like, they have a Wunderlich auto version, and they give guys like, they're like, Matt Leinart's a 6 on the Wunderlich auto, but Andrew Luck is like a 45 on a Wunderlich auto.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. I mean, that, yeah, Russell Wilson's could be better. It's not bad, though. It's not bad. I agree. Russell Wilson's is kind of in the middle. You know, I'm trying to think of a guy that's like a legend or a Hall of Famer that has like, I mean, a terrible auto.
Doesn't,
I'm just trying to think off the top of my head.
Doesn't Adrian Peterson have a pretty bad auto?
No, it's like a lot of hoops and stuff, but it's a pretty legitimate auto.
It's
pretty legit.
You talk about circles. You're talking about big bad Brock Osweiler. That guy probably took him about. At the rookie premiere, he was probably there signing for. It was probably midnight. He was still there, like doing circles, because that guy, like, literally is like drawing a portrait. He's like, look at my auto.
And there's
a circle,
yeah,
for every,
must,
every foot tall he is.
Yeah, that's easily faked. Yeah, easily faked. There, you could definitely figure his auto out. But there's a lot of guys in Leaf Metal draft. I mean, obviously I'm not familiar with a lot of them. There are a lot of guys out there, their autos are terrible. Like bad, like really bad. Sammy Watkins has a good auto. That guy, watch out for that guy. Based on auto alone, Sammy Watkins may be a beast, just based on auto. I'm just saying.
That's how I'm gonna. That's how I'm gonna do my PC this year. I'm not gonna do it by Stanford. I'm gonna do it by what their auto looks like. I'm gonna draft my fantasy team based on what your auto looks like. Everything is gonna be based on your penmanship. That's how we're doing it now.
There you go. I mean, Johnny Manziel's auto is a little busy. It's not the best. AJ McCarron has a nice auto. You know who has a really good auto who sucked? Trent Edwards has an amazing looking auto, and he sucked. So I don't know. Maybe
he doesn't
translate.
He didn't suck though. He was good in college.
No, when? In high school? In top order?
Who?
Trent Edwards, the quarterback.
Oh, I thought you said Trent Richardson.
Trent Edwards from Buffalo Bills fame, Las Vegas.
Good auto, right?
Yeah, very good auto. Probably one of the best.
I know. He's one of my boys. That guy went to Stanford.
Yeah. Yeah, Shelby Miller has an amazing auto too, Ryan. I agree.
Autos in the business.
Now, is it because these guys sign so much their auto gets crappy? Is that why? It could be part of it.
You know who I have no idea if he has a good looking auto? I just based on the facsimile auto I've seen, if I hope that is his auto, is Johnny Cueto. Never seen a live one.
I've seen it, dude. He's live. He's live and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's live. It's definitely not what Topps put out back in 2008 or whatever that card was.
That was amazing. I wish his auto was like that. It was block letters and, like, it looked like a five-year-old.
God, what year was that? Was that 2009 or 2008,
it was,
Bowman?
I think it was 2010 Bowman.
Oh, no, it's 2008 Bowman Chrome. Here it is. I'll link it up for you guys in the room. Check out this facsimile auto. I'm going to link it up in here in the room.
It's amazing.
It's pretty epic. Click on that and tell me what you guys think. Just search 2008 Bowman Chrome Johnny Cueto rookie card. And, yeah, it's pretty maybe they could only get a facsimile auto when he was five.
That's what I wish his autos were. If that was the case, I'd be like, the person in our tribute player break just came up. I'm like, you got some stuff that's just put in the PC vault right there.
The Tavares Leaf Trinity was like that too. Remember?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. The inscribed one. The inscription.
I know. He got that card. He's like, basically, he's all, you gave me, like, no room to sign my name. I like to use big hoops and stuff like that. So, you know what? I'm just going to write my name out like I'm putting it on a contract. So deal with it. What am I going to do? Let's get back into some of the reviews. We're going to talk Supreme Football. Came out last Friday. Was it Friday or Wednesday? Friday? It came out last week. They all blend into one. Yeah, actually, it was last Wednesday. And
I like it,
Wednesday, Friday, Wednesday, same day. It came out, I like Supreme. We did two cases of it last night. I think it's a great product. It's only one hit, but they put a lot of vets, they put a lot of legends, they have a lot of dual autos, they have a book per case. I think that product was a success.
I like how when you keep on saying you like it, your voice is going up like you're trying to convince yourself you like it.
No, I'm being genuine here. I like it.
I know. You keep on saying that you'll really
believe
it.
I love this product. I love it. I want more of it.
It's a the only thing I can say with Supreme, go big or go home. You're either going to get a card where you're like, that was the best $100 I've ever spent. Or you're going to be like, that is the hardest kick in the sack that I've ever had for $100.
Yeah, it's best digested in case form, because you could buy a box and get a Kenyon Barner auto for $100.
Or a Terrence Williams single color relic.
Yeah, that's the box we got. We decided it was a box.
That, That was my personal box to myself, and everybody's jealous because that was. I hooked you guys up, made sure that one wasn't going to go into a mixer.
Yeah, and lucky for you guys, we pull all the good cards for you, because when it comes to opening cards for ourselves, we're terrible, awful, like batting an 80, .80, .080 on success.
Yeah, Terrence Williams, boom.
Yeah, boom, damn.
$77.
Hey, maybe a future Hall of Famer. Maybe if he'll hold on for 20 years, might go up.
But overall, yeah, the product they did it right. But again, look at the price of the box.
And it's one hit.
Look at the amount of hits. It's one hit. So they can spend $40 on an auto of somebody who is relevant.
Yeah.
So. I mean, I don't know. And I'm surprised that product went down after release. Because
yeah, I know.
After all the football products that came out, I'm like, this is not bad. This is a good product. I know it's one hit, but it's not watered down.
Out of
15 boxes, you're going to get 4 boxes that have a relic. 2 of them are probably going to be single color relics, and then 2 of them are probably going to be prime relics. And then everything else is going to be autos. And yeah, you have to look out for the Ace Sanders and the Kenyon Barner, but and probably Nile Davis. I'm just going to say that Nile Davis is probably in there. Maybe not,
yeah.
But.
I think I figured it out. I figured it out, dude. You know when you go. I know, I'm building it up. You know when you take an elevator and you're in a lot of, not every hotel does this, but you know how they skip the 13th floor?
Yeah. And every hotel I've ever been to that's big enough to have a 13th floor doesn't have a 13th floor, but keep on going.
Right. So that's basically what happened. We should have just all skipped 2013 in general when it comes to football cards. So, and how I'm relaying this to Supreme is that a card shop owner, even they didn't even give it a chance because they got the shakes when they saw it was 2013 football came through the door. They started shaking. They saw it was 2013. They were frightened. They hit their ball of Jack Daniels, and they were like, let's just – who wants it? I'll take that. I'll take half off. Like, take it. 2013, I'm getting the shakes. And that's what they did. So and they didn't give it a chance to breathe because they just based it on all their – it's like a dog that just keeps getting beat. They got beat so much in 2013 that they're just like, that's going to suck. I don't even know. It's just going to suck anyway. Let's just sell it at a loss. And that's what happened with Supreme. They didn't give it a chance to open it and see that it was good.
That should be your introduction to the group break meeting with all the manufacturers there. You should be like, okay, are you guys, don't worry. I know you guys got the shakes from the 2013. I'm like, if you feel compelled to. If you have some extra money in your wallet right now, if you can go ahead and take it out and go ahead and give it to the manufacturers just as like a farewell to 2013, just in case you didn't get enough, here's
yeah.
A little bit more money for you.
Yeah, pretty much.
But,
yeah, they're going to
– Or yeah. you could just have a 2013 little, like, basket for donations, and you just throw it in there, and at the end of your group rate meeting, you just light it on fire.
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, you guys were already doing this through 2013 anyway. It's just let's just have fun with it, and then we can go out and have drinks and sweat out 2013.
Yeah,
get past it. No, but see, they skipped 13 on a hotel for a reason. Just skip.
Everybody knows that. The 14th floor is truly the 13th floor. They're just trying to sugarcoat it for you.
Yeah, but they could have just made Andrew Luck rookies again all throughout 2013. That would have been cool.
Maybe what they'll do is at the summit they'll come up and be like, okay, guys, we've decided that we're going to do a combined 13-14 football rookie class. We're just going to, since we've got so many autos from 13 still, we're just going to combine it with this year. and then we get one more year of these guys.
Yeah, yeah, there
what do you, you
go.
What do you think? What do you think? You into it?
Yeah, man, that's a good idea, man. You should patent that one.
I should.
I got some more reviews.
This show is really turned into a kind of a doom and gloom show.
I know. I actually have it on my, if I can show you guys on the camera, I actually have a topic to talk about called negativity in the hobby, and now I'm being the poster boy for it. But we're doing it in a laughing manner, though. We're taking it lightly. So I hope you guys, you know, we still take this seriously. Like if I was, what's that guy, the quarterback for the Cardinals? I take this seriously. I don't go out Monday Night Football and lose a game. Yeah, Derek Anderson. I take this seriously. Yeah, exactly. I should have a sound clip for that.
I think seriously.
I'll go out there and laugh. So, I mean, there's a lot of, but it's just like the news, though. If we came on here and just said, I love Tribune, I love it, love you, nobody would listen. The negativity.
That's more loves in one sentence than I've ever heard on this show. That was a whole lot of love right there.
need a Zeppelin little thing for that one right there.
Well, I mean, you could have keyed up the Led Zeppelin "Whole Lot of Love" right there. It would have been a perfect segue.
I know, man.
Our next review, which I think is going to be the greatest football product ever. That's actually what it was called, right?
Oh, you mean museum?
Yeah.
I was actually going to go down to Tribute, but I was just talking about doom and gloom, so we should probably hold on.
I don't think. Do we have to really talk about Tribute?
No, we won't. No, we'll let you guys formulate your own opinions. Still got three cases. We're going to go hold off on that review. We're going to hold off on Tribute until these three cases are gone. Anybody want to buy any?
I just want to say. Instead of the only thing I'm going to say about Tribute, and I think I've said it a million times, because I'm never going to stop saying it. So instead of putting an encased tit in there, Tops was nice enough to be like, hey, tit, they cost us too much money. We're going to go ahead and take that money and give you an extra auto.
Yeah.
Insert Johnny Cueto redemption here.
Yes.
We're going to give you a promissory note for Johnny Cueto. There you go. You could have gave me a redemption. You could have gave me, like, a redemption of anybody in an encased, I could at least use the encased, the magnetic.
Yeah, exactly.
The worst case scenario with 2011 Tribute is that if you got a crappy hit, you could be like, at least I got a $4 magnetic.
That was 2012, by the way.
2012. Sorry. At least I got a $4 magnetic, and I can go ahead and reuse that.
It just makes it look more valuable. I don't know. Yeah, I agree. They need to bring it back. Maybe we can talk to them about that. But, yeah, let's skip past Tribute because there is some value to be had. I wouldn't recommend buying a box. I would recommend maybe getting in a break. Maybe doing it that way so that you could spend $30, $40 and get some Tribute because there is some nice stuff, chances at some good stuff. But there's the design's good. Just the autograph signers is, I think, where they lack. That's what they needed to maybe work on for the next year's of Tribute. So, but let's go on to museum. And I kind of wanted to talk about, before we leave, so I want to just barely touch a museum. I wanted to talk about the group break legalities that everybody else is talking about. So I want to talk about it because I've actually done the research. And there was a blog that was kind of put up on a site because of a conversation that I started. That we started. I don't want to just say me, that we started. So we'll talk about that. But go ahead and keep, talk about museum. I think museum football could be the product of the year for the value. I think the Tops hit a home run with museum football. We've done three or four cases, and everyone's been amazing. They've gotten good autograph signers, Drew Brees, Andrew Luck. They didn't water it down with rookies. They used the rookies just enough to make the hits valuable. The museum card was nice. I really don't have anything bad to say about the product. I really don't. I think it was a home run, and it's a props to Tops for taking a product in a down year, 2013, skip to the 14th floor, take a product in a down year and make an amazing product, and that's what they did. So
that whole – are you clapping?
Yeah, I'm clapping for Tops, man. I'm giving a standing ovation.
Wow, okay. I mean, because it was good, but I mean, I'm not going to go out of my way to start clapping. I mean,
well, the bar was lowered so far in prior releases that they, you know, instead of putting out a turd, they put out a turd with some cheese on it, and I ate it right up.
Well, what they did is that they literally kept a design that worked for baseball.
Yeah.
Everything about it worked for baseball. People love it. It's a flagship now. I consider it a flagship for baseball. Everybody looks forward to it. It's actually kind of taking over what Tribute used to be. Tribute keeps on coming out, and it's like it just gets worse and worse and worse. Museum comes out, gets better and better and better. So they basically took the same card design and just put football players on it and really added the value with the subjects, which probably cost them a little bit more money. But look, they get guys like us. We're talking good about it. We rip them all the time.
Yeah.
That's got to be worth something, huh?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was great.
Like, if there was a Topps employee, and he was the reason for Museum, he deserves a hug. Got to hug that guy.
A bro hug. Not just a hug, a bro hug. You know, where you slap the hand. Yeah, you slap the hand and you slap the other one around the back. Yeah, you come in real close for the real deal.
No, you come in real close and you do the little shoulder-to-shoulder, like, nudge, you know, because you can't leave them hanging. You got to nudge it up with the shoulder. And that's what that designer and that product manager deserves. He deserves a little homie hug.
Yeah, I'd send him a Christmas card.
He's on my list.
Yeah, maybe somebody can find out who designed that. Maybe they could give that guy a raise, have him working 48 hours a day, because there's 48 hours in a day, and have him just make product. He's killing it. No need for anything else.
48 hours.
In a day, yeah. You're doing the math now, huh? It makes a lot of sense. It came right out of my mouth. Yeah, good job on that product, and I'm actually shocked that I was expecting it to go up to like $250 a box, but people have the 2013 shakes. That's what it is. They're like, God, it's leveled out. We can break even. I got the shakes. We can break even. Sell the case. That's what's going on.
In 2013, I want to know how often it's going to be said at the summit. Well, breaking even's new up.
Yeah.
New up.
Yeah.
Breaking or losing 10% on your pre-sale, that's the new up.
Winning.
Yeah, I hope that's not gonna be that's gonna be the whole like theme of the summit. I hope not though.
And I know
it's going to be like, well, you know what, everybody will survive the 2013 rookie class, and I get it. Like, we should be talking about that. Yes, for everybody who's still there, we did survive the 2013 rookie class. But what we need to take out of the 2013 rookie class is how do we sustain a profitable business model when there is not a slam dunk rookie class? We know what we did in 2013 was not the right way to do it. So next time, say 2015 is going to be a bad rookie class. I don't know if there is, but let's say it's going to repeat 2013. Let's not repeat the same thing we did in 2013 and throw out products. Know right then and there that you have to face it head on with the first release of the year.
Yeah, because there's going to be another bad rookie class at some point.
They're not going to always be good. So... And I think baseball, you can kind of get away with it because you never know if these guys are going to be good because you have to invest for 4 years down the road.
Right.
So these guys always hold value because there's the huge uncertainty. But in football, by week three, week four, week five, these guys don't even have uniforms or these guys didn't even make the team. These guys are on the practice squad. You know that he has no value. You know Ryan Swope. When you pulled a Ryan Swope out of the first product of the year, you knew that card had no value.
Right.
And it was never going to have value. It was never going to be
Right. You knew it. You knew from right from the get-go. And not to – because I want to get into the group break thing. We're running close on 10 minutes. But there is good things to come. I'm looking at the 2014, just based on Leaf Metal. I mean, there's some insane prices right now. Compared to last, Leaf Metal is awesome. I mean, it's good design without – I mean, props to Brian. I'm going to clap again. Johnny Manziel's number 250 sold for $240. A Blake Bortles number 5 sold for $200. A Johnny Manziel all day number 250 over $200. Those are selling for. A Teddy Bridgewater number 5 sold for $200. So David Fales looks like it sold. Did you buy that one? David Fales 101. So best offer accepted, $200. Super Fractor. AJ McCarron printing plate, too. So there's a lot of value in these guys right now, which was not seen last year. So if this is any signs to come, 2014, we're going to just be killing it, son. It's just going to be killing it. So as these guys, this draft class is stacked. It's just up to the manufacturers to not screw it over. So, we'll see that. But I wanted to get into the legalities of the group breaks. A lot of people are saying that, there's this stuff roaming around Twitter that, group breaks are not legal. And, honestly, nobody has proof of that. And if group breaks aren't illegal, it falls back to Topps' products aren't legal. Panini's products aren't legal. The reason, and we're offering it now on our site, a no purchase necessary for any of our customers. If you want to get the card at the same odds, you send in a no purchase necessary to Topps or Panini or what have you, just so that we're offering the same thing that's on the box. I think where a lot of group breakers may not be covered is that they're not sending people stuff. One thing that we've always done is that, there's some people that don't want their base cards. That's fine. We send every single base card. Not that we're, better than anybody. That's just been a practice of ours. And I think that falls under the law as well, from what I can understand, is that if somebody buys something, they need to get sent something, regardless if it's $5, $6, $100, $300. If you buy something, you need to get something in return. That's just, kind of common practice, at least for me, I think. I'm trying to figure out where I was going to go with this, is the law only falls on cases that were made prior. And I think that's what I heard. I'm not going to say that I came up with that. That came from Paul Lesko. So if there was never a law for group breaking, then there's nothing to go back on to know that it's legal. Illegal or legal. So the NPN is the one way that everybody's going to be covered. So that's what we're going to go going forward. We've always done that. People have asked us for NPNs. We've done that. We post it on our site now under our terms and conditions to say, hey, you want to participate in this and get a card at the same odds, just send in something to Topps. That's all you got to do. So, and we always – our customer service, we always try to get everything for everybody. Somebody doesn't get something, they get hobby packs and stuff like that. So we feel like we're more than fair. So there's a lot of people that have attached razzing with group breaking, and they've lumped it all into one category and say, hey, all this is illegal. And there's nothing out there, and it's on a per-state basis. Dan, what can you add to that? And I'm just rambling here.
No, I mean, you're dead on. We do send everything out to – lump the whole razzing is a raffle, and
yes.
I don't care where you are. If you are receiving money and raffling something off for profit, you are doing something illegal. That goes without being said. I think everybody, even if you do like razzes, I'm not even saying anything bad about them. I mean, if I wasn't in the industry, razzes would be intriguing to me. I'd be intrigued to maybe join one. I'm not saying anything bad about them. I'm just saying, like, the law states that they are illegal. That is
well,
an unfortunate thing.
The law states a raffle is illegal.
Yeah, a raffle is illegal.
Yes.
Now, it's just a matter of time before it stops. It will. Somebody will catch on. There's already been like enough stuff on Twitter to where I think it's just a matter of time before PayPal just basically puts the squash on it. Now, that being said, there's always different avenues of going about doing something. The people who will sustain and keep on going will figure out another way to do it.
Let's face that. you can easily say you're buying a pack of USA Champions baseball for $25, and one person's going to be randomly selected to receive a Byron Buxton auto. You could probably – I don't know if that's legal for sure, but it sounds like that would be – because now you're selling a pack of cards for the same amount. Now, you may have to do some kind of no purchase necessary with that as well to possibly win a pack or cards from the pack. So you may have to do something. There's probably ways to do it. The ways I – and once again, I have – my opinion is in the middle on this. I won't do it as a business, but – if, like, I've seen somebody doing a Barry Bonds – I've been trying to buy a Barry Bonds auto for a while. If I've seen somebody doing, like, a Tribute 101 Barry Bonds auto and I could get it for $15, hey, I'll spend $15 for the chance. I'm not going to spend $300 on eBay, but maybe. So I see the intrigue. Now, I think some people take it too far and they do it through razzles all night and they lose a lot of money and stuff and they don't get anything in return. That's their prerogative. That's their money. So I see that side of it. I just – at the end of the day – it's not legal, so people need to worry about being protected from their PayPals and stuff like that if they're basing it on their – if their income is from that and they're making an income doing that, it could quickly go away. That's it.
And one more thing before we're done and getting back to the group breaking. At the end of the day, we've already kind of started implementing it in our breaks. And it states on the no purchase necessary that no card in any given said pack is going to give you X amount of money or be valued at X amount of dollars.
Yes.
For group breakers who are doing group breaks, I know we're all used to saying, oh, that's at least a $200 card. Well, that right there puts you behind the eight ball when it comes to a legality standpoint. Because you're saying that that card is valued more than said other card, then it's gambling.
Right.
So going forward, we're implementing more of a, the card is worth basically the material.
It's so hard for me to bite my lip, and, I don't want to be that guy. But, unfortunately, going forward in some of our streams, you may see us say, oh, that's worth two boxes of Tribute or something. You may see us see something funny like that. It's just because we want to be protected from said law that one card's worth more than the other. Because, I always use the example. 2007, Dice K came out. His cards were selling for $600. His cards now are selling for $2, $3, $4, maybe a little bit more than that. But I'm just saying, it's the value of the card is what somebody's willing to pay. So what the card is worth is the cardboard and the sticker. That's it.
Yes.
Not like
the cardboard. The amount of material that's made into making the product is what the monetary value is of the card. Now, what somebody is willing to pay for said card on the open market can't determine what that card is worth. So, I don't. There's questions about the legality issues that will probably never be answered because it will probably never be brought into a court of law. So there may literally be speculation going forward, but we do know there's certain things that are okay to do and certain things that are not okay to do. So that's where we're at right now. And like, again, we won't know until there is a documented court case about group breaking.
Yeah, we have a lawyer. We contacted a lawyer. He had us look into it, and he doesn't have a clear-cut answer for us either. So no one's sure on it. There's like I said before, and no one knows for sure. I think it would, if we were doing coins and there were certain valued coins, and it's a coin worth gold coins, where that would be considered more because now you can put value on a coin. But the market is on cards. There's no set market. So and everybody, they're picking. People are picking their teams and things like that. So there's a lot of different variables, but we're going to leave you with that. We'll talk about it more, and like check out mojobreak.com, sportscardradio.com for Ryan's not here. He's in Arizona watching baseball. I wish I was there. Check out their website. They got, checklists and articles and stuff. And join our breaks tomorrow. We got Spectra coming out tomorrow. So we'll review Spectra next week. We'll keep talking this topic of the group breaking thing. Because it's a big segment. It's a big segment of the market. And, we want people to do breaks. We don't want to be the only ones doing breaks. We want to make sure everybody's able to do breaks. We can't do breaks 24 hours. you know, this people more people buy cards, the more cards were worth more. More breakers are, the more people participate in breaks. So that's, you know, one of the reasons why we did what we did.
Yeah.
And obviously we're protecting ourselves.
The better for the end user when there's competition. So
correct.
I've always been an advocate for competition. You know, it makes you better. It makes everybody better. It makes you strive to be better. I've always been a big fan. And at the end of the day, it's the consumer that wins.
Yes.
The consumer that gets a better service and a better product. So in no means have we ever tried to hold down a competitor. And
we had Rich Layton on the show. I mean, we could just as easily go, screw him. We don't want any of our customers knowing who Rich Layton is, blah, blah, blah. You know, we could be that guy. But we know we can't be the only breaker out there. You just can't. You can't have – Target can't be the only place if there's no Walmart, Best Buy. Yeah, and I'm not saying we're on that level because we're not. We're just two guys breaking cards. That's not who we are. I'm just using that as an example. I'm not – My head's not big. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, we do care about this. Well, it's big. It's big in size, but not necessarily big in ego. It's not big in ego. I open cards for a living. You open cards for a living. I mean, try to explain that to people outside this industry. But, you know, that's just we want to see this industry grow because if that grows, we grow and we're able to do what we love for a living. That's bottom line.
Yeah, and the reason why we're doing this and the reason why we're going out of our way to find out the logistics and legality of what we're doing is because we want it to sustain. And we also – what we find out is going to be common knowledge that we're going to share with everybody. And it's going to be wide open for everybody to see and everybody to use from a legality standpoint so they can keep on doing what they love doing. And
right.
And, you know, it evens the playing field for everybody involved. And that's basically what we have been working on in the last – and some people have been like, well, why are you guys doing that? Like, why are you taking the extra step to do that? And it's just because we want to protect ourselves, protect the industry, and protect everybody who's involved.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we don't want to see this go away. So it's a good experience for the end user who wants to collect their team and stuff like that. Actually, I think we're on the archives right now, so the people who are listening live got cut off. But we're still going on the archives. So, yeah, I was worried about trying to fill a two-hour show. I mean, we went over 2 hours. So, yeah, and that's the end goal. We love what we do. We love the hobby. I still, to this day, get excited to open cards. I know Dan does, too. It's exciting to come in here and do this. And we wanted to maintain the growth that it's already done, and how many great breakers we see out there. There's a lot of them. I don't know all of them, but I watch videos, and I see customers say, I got this from this guy, and this guy's good, and stuff like that. I know who the good guys are. I've heard bad stories, and I don't know if they're true. I've heard bad stories about guys, too. I don't know if that's true because I don't know the person, but there's a lot of people doing good, and there's a lot of people taking care of customers, and that's the bottom line. We want to continue this growth period for it and grow together. So I'm going to go ahead and play the outro. You got anything left to say, Dan?
No, I can't believe we're in the archives right now.
I know. So, all right, man. Well, we are everybody. I'm talking to Dan on the phone. We'll see you guys. I don't know if we'll be live next week. We may wait until we're at the summit, so we have a lot more stuff to talk about. So we'll let you guys know on Twitter 2 hours before the show, like I always do. So we'll let you guys know if we're going to be live next week. If not, we'll see you and talk from the summit. So that should be interesting. We'll talk to you later.
Peace. All right. Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Sports Card Live, sponsored by SportsCardRadio.com, MojoBreak.com. Check us out every Tuesday live at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 Eastern, or download us on iTunes.